Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I want to begin by discussing this very audacious, brazen attack that Ukraine launched using over 100 drones on strategic cruise missile carriers, these bombers across multiple air bases, thousands of kilometers away from Kyiv, deep in Russian territory, all the way up to Siberia. This was a huge embarrassment for Russia, given you've lost now a third of these carriers.
You know, we were mostly surprised because there are several attacks that has been done by Ukrainians on our territory on the eve of the new round of discussion in Istanbul. There was a seriously bomb attack against railway infrastructure, which resulted in many civilian casualties, unfortunately, which shows that it was a pure terroristic act, since it has been designed against civilians, against train, against bridges. So three attacks and one more this morning. Another very unpleasant one is, of course, that is what you are saying about. It is a highly sophisticated attack, which involves definitely against our strategic potential. I wouldn't say it has a lot of damage. The damage was limited.
A third of the bombers were attacked.
Recent figures showing it is around 10, something like that. Damaged, but not totally.
Ukrainians say
totally
over 40?
40, yes, Ukrainians say. Yes, of course, but it is based only on the data. But what I would like to point out is the importance of it, that it is a very serious escalation in terms of trying to damage strategic potential, because it is a blow against strategic stability, which we have established in our strategic relations with the United States. This is a very serious thing, to try to damage this strategic balance, strategic stability issue. That is why President Putin called yesterday to President Trump, and they discussed it, the necessity, and our hope that we will get a reaction from London as well. Because I will tell you, such kind of attack involves, of course, provision of very high technology, so-called geospace data, which is only can be done by those who has it in possession. And this is London and Washington.
So you're pointing the finger of blame on the Americans and...
I don't believe that Americans, that has been denied by President Trump, definitely. But it has not been denied by London.
And the Ukrainians simultaneously, say that they didn't tell their allies about it. This is purely a Ukrainian operation.
We perfectly know how much London is involved, how deeply British forces are involved in working together with Ukrainian in targeting Crimean breach, for instance, targeting other issues, provision of satellite information, not only, but also data that is needed to launch missiles, flight data, so-called. That is why we, of course, expect a certain reaction from London. But what we have heard so far, it is announcement by the British Minister of Defense that they are going to provide 10,000 more drones to Ukrainians than before. Last year it was 10,000, so it will be 100,000. So it is much better if he will say that he understands what is strategic balance, strategic stability. And I hope that in London there are experts that are remember what it is and how important it is for peace to maintain peace not only in the conflict but in general on the earth.
If you are pointing the finger of blame on London and you believe that the
this
British
is not
military...
me, but you will see a lot of experts around the world that are saying right now. Actually, I'm repeating what they are saying right now.
Let's just break some of this down, because you have described this, Moscow has described this as a terrorist act. But this is in the middle of a war, and these are air bases. This is fair game, because these are military infrastructure, and this is part of warfare. unlike Russia, which in the last few weeks has targeted multiple civilian infrastructure and left dozens of civilians dead in Ukraine, to the point where President Trump has said, has Vladimir Putin gone crazy?
I should not repeat to you, because it is our weather meeting for the first time. We have a lot of discussion. We are targeting only military infrastructure. Sometimes it is causing, there is a collateral damage, and we do not deny it, of course. It happens.
Things are schools, happening. We've seen schools, hospitals but targeted.
In the last few weeks,
civilian infrastructure was targeted.
Some hotels has been targeted because there were meetings of senior officials of Ukraine over the year, and you know that it has been done, and we did have good information. We have done it. What happened about the aircrafts, although, as I will repeat, damage is limited, and most of them, or all of them, as it was said yesterday, will be repaired. But this is a major escalation. It brings escalation to another level. And here we have to attract attention of President Trump to it. That is why our president called to him. He understands what it is, strategic stability, how important it is in a relationship between nuclear states. UK is a nuclear state.
Is this a threat to the UK?
Where do you see the threat?
Well,
where do you see a threat?
When you say
the UK is always see a threat everywhere.
Yeah, but when you say that the British military are behind this brazen attack, when you point the finger of blame on London, when you say that this is not you saying this, these are experts around the world saying this, and it destabilizes things, what do you mean?
This is what I mean. It is, we have an agreement with the United States on the issue of strategic stability. It is called, we have a series of agreement on strategic offensive armament, which establish certain levels in every piece of triada, so-called nuclear triada. Numbers of it has been negotiated carefully. Numbers of missiles, numbers of nukes, number of submarines, and of course air forces as well. So if there is an attack or damaging, destruction of a piece of it, the equalization is different right now. But we just pointing out that it is dangerous. So one should not continue this. One should understand that is a part of a different level at all. That is why we say it is better to stop it, not to allow it further.
Shouldn't Russia be taking its own advice? I mean, Russia did start this war. You continue to target civilian infrastructure. Just this morning, a government building was targeted in Kherson. Overnight, civilians were killed because of the ongoing civilian attacks on civilians by Russia. The Ukrainians say they targeted these bombers because they directly hit civilians and kill Ukrainians. That's why
I haven't seen that. Yelda, this is not our first conversation. If you will continue to pose me the same question, I will give you the same answers. It's a repetition of order.
But the reason, Ambassador, I'm pushing you on this is because this has left Russia exposed. When these air bases are targeted, when a third of your bombers have been destroyed by Ukraine, which, by the way, you know, President Trump has told Ukraine to wrap this up, and yet Ukraine continues to show it has agility and is creative in trying to push Russia back. Does it destroy the myth of the great Russian military when we see this kind of humiliation?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all, because military actions on the ground continues. Last month, we have taken 600 square kilometers liberated of the territory. We continue our offensive all across, along the line of where it's happening. Ukraine is in Ukrainian forces. I'm not saying Ukraine, but Ukrainian forces continue retreat. They are losing grounds more and more. We are in offensive. So what to do is to negotiate durable, serious end of the conflict. Peace, not a short cessation, for 30 or 60 days, which happened before many times. Three or four times we did have such a cessation of military actions, but then it has been resumed. So there is no sense in it. We need to eliminate ground roots of it. There are two of them, and we discussed it before. It is reestablishment, of course, of the rights of Russians on the territory of Russian-speaking people on the territory of Ukraine, normal abolishment of all laws on that, and Ukraine as a neutral, non-nuclear state. These are ground roots of the conflict. So this is what we are talking about. But when we have got in Istanbul the same position from Ukrainians, that they would like to be members of NATO, and nothing about other sides and about what we are talking about, of course it is an embarrassing. We will continue. Yeah, there was, of course, in Moscow a certain anger about what have happened, and there was a discussion yesterday on the upper level whether we have to continue talks or this is such a provocation that we have to stop it. We decided to continue.
How will you respond to this attack? Because President Putin said there will
be
a response.
Yes, he said. He said this also to President Trump, but it is up to the Ministry of Defense to decide when and how it is going to happen.
Is everything on the table, including nuclear attack?
No, I don't think so. Nuclear attack, this is not a type of a conflict which is presupposed a kind of a nuclear attack, but we have different means. And it is not up to me. I have no idea. It is up to Ministry of Defense to make a right solution, but we have to respond to it.
You talk about Ukraine losing this conflict, but what they have shown at the weekend is their ability to hit back and hit Russia hard. You rely on Iranian drones, North Koreans and Chinese mercenaries for your manpower. Your military has lost some 11,000 tanks. The death toll now...
How many tanks do you...
11,000 tanks is
really?
What we're being. A million men.
A million men, oh my God.
There have been reports of up to a million. But there have been a lot of deaths. I mean, the number of Russians who have died in what has been described as this meat grinder of a conflict,
Yelza,
and the injuries.
It makes no sense to discuss our losses because they have been taken from the ceiling. It is. We have now, we are applying a totally different tactic now than in the beginning of the conflict because we are not now trying to take towns and villages up front, I mean, in a sort of it. We are just encircling them. We are cutting off logistics and they are falling themselves. It doesn't require frontal attack at all. So that is why we are taking at least daily two or three villages or small towns, and we are moving forward very quickly.
You thought this conflict would end within a few weeks, and yet 3 years in, we're seeing the kind of damage to deep in Russian territory.
That's right. As for Russian territory, it is now totally liberated. And our resources allowing us to continue these military actions for a long time. But the choice now is for Kyiv, whether they are going to choose right now a solution to the conflict, I mean the normal agreement, normal treaty, which will eliminate ground routes, which I was talking about before, or a defeat, a total surrender with much worse conditions.
That's unlikely to happen, given the way that Ukraine is proceeding. We've seen bridges, air bases hit. They aren't backing down.
There are attempts, of course, to pass money to certain people in Russia to make them this hybrid war, as it has been described here, by the way, as with arsons, with explosions. I don't know whether they are Ukrainians or some other special forces who are designing this. Yes, this happened, but general tendency is totally different. It is Ukrainians are in retreat. They are going to lose this cause, and those who are conducting proxy war, as Kemi Badenoch recently revealed to the world, what really is happening, that Britain, other countries are conducting a proxy war by Ukrainian hands against Russia. So this is what is going to happen.
You describe what happened at the weekend as a serious escalation, and then on the other hand, you say Ukraine is losing this war. Do you and does Moscow view what happened at the weekend as a humiliation?
No, there are some people who are saying that, of course, there should be more precautions taken on about the airfields, and that is correct, I will say, because lessons of this war, they continue to arrive. It is still, I would say, a war, really. If it will be a war, then we will cut all bridges across Dnieper River. they are not numerous, and we will just cut a third of it, of the country, out of the other third. So we do not do it. It is still a limited operation.
When we're seeing the losses that Russia has, the losses that Russia has endured. I mean, you talk about the fact that, you know, Russia has the upper hand. Why are you relying on North Koreans and the Chinese?
We don't rely.
We know that North Koreans,
yes, they have been praised for their participation, but it is very limited.
Why are they there? Why are all these foreign fighters fighting Russia's war right now?
Not many foreign fighters are working with us. Many works with Ukrainians, being part of the mercenaries in the Ukrainian units. They are over there because from time to time we are catching them and we are sentencing them for long term. As for North Koreans, I do not have a long explanation for that. They did want to have a military experience, and they got it. Some limited military experience. As I understand, they are now back on it. Others, we don't involve anyone. We have sufficient supremacy right now. It is about 1 to 1.5 our supremacy on the theater, so we do not need more. We just continue this operation until the end, until all goals of operation announced before will be reached.
So when President Putin says we need to sit round a table and negotiate, you won't do that until all of Russia's goals have been met and reached?
No, we are sitting at the moment. There are two ways of conducting negotiations. One is that the conflict has come to an impasse, there is no movement, then you sit and discuss a compromise. And other way around, we have said from the very beginning, because we have had already this ceasefire, another ceasefire, nothing happened, another ceasefire, nothing happens.
Russia was defying the ceasefire.
We continue negotiations. We are going on with the negotiations because it is important. We reached good agreements. We have an exchange for 1,000 persons, soldiers that has been captured in each other. After tomorrow, we are going to exchange prisoners. It will involve 1,200 people from each side. We suggested that Ukraine will take 6,000 dead bodies, which are now in the refrigerators, back on it, although they are refusing to do it. We have a very interesting exchange on children, and that is extremely important.
Are you going to give Ukrainian children back?
It's an interesting story, if you will listen to it, because initially President Zelensky was speaking about 200,000 children stolen from Ukraine. Then he was insisting that there are 20,000 children stolen from Ukraine, and these are grounds or reasons for International Criminal Court to issue some warrants also against President Putin. What it appeared to be, it is 300, we've got a list from Ukraine during last round negotiations. It has 339 names. Nothing else.
I will just
tell you a bit more about that. During a recent period of time, we returned to Ukraine when we have established that there are parents, there are relatives of these children. We returned about 100 with something of them. We are going to identify these children if they have really relatives in Ukraine, not in Germany, not in Britain, not in Bulgaria or something like that. If they really are on our territory and if they have families in Ukraine, we are returning them.
I just want to quote to you the Conflict Observatory, part of Yale University's Humanitarian Research Lab. They verified that at least 19,500 children were forcibly deported from occupied areas of Ukraine. They were funneled into re-education camps or adopted by Russian families.
I have no idea which source it is, but we have got an official list from a Ukrainian delegation in Istanbul, and it has 339 names.
Why were these children taken to begin with?
Because they were on the fire line, on the line of fire, close to the fighting people. These were homeless children, most of all. Mostly it is care homes in which children these were, and they were just taken by our militaries to a safer place, that is all.
Into Russia? They were taken from Ukraine.
And, Ukraine. It is a region where fighting is going on. What do you want from us? Just to leave them over there?
I mean, you're killing Ukrainian children on a daily basis, and yet you're taking these children into Russian territory, inside Russia, and putting them in re-education camps and up for adoption.
You should read less of the Western press. Take some views, some other views also.
Well, that's why I'm talking to you, Ambassador. Yeah, because, this is a major point of contention. But
a major point of contention about children, as I say, there is a channel, a good channel between our ombudsman and Ukrainian ombudsman. And we have regularly are exchanging prisoners of war, and a special attention is given to children. In the recent period of time, we have returned 101, while we have established that they really do have relatives, and these relatives are prepared to take them back. And we will continue this war on daily work on daily basis. Right now, we have a list, official list, not invented by some unofficial institution or independent players or something like they say, but it is really the amount, number of these children is relatively small, and we can work on that. This is realistic, and we'll do that.
Ambassador, how seriously are you taking peace talks? Because the delegation that Russia sent to Istanbul is quite a low-level delegation versus what the Ukrainians have sent. I mean, President Zelensky was there at one point himself. His defense minister is there and leading the delegation. They are taking it seriously on their part. When a ceasefire is called, they are happy to comply, by the rules of the ceasefire. And yet Russia violates the ceasefire, has sent a very low-level team to Istanbul, and it doesn't feel as though Russia is taking these talks seriously.
This is absolutely not true, because in our system, assistant to the president, it's a very high level. It is a level of the minister. He is being assisted by a deputy minister of defense, by deputy minister of foreign affairs. So it is a team of specialists. They are not specialists. It is high-level delegation. Because at this moment, what they are discussing is that they are laying groundwork make a framework agreement or memorandum. Probably they have exchanged positions right now, because until now all of this element of positions have been pronounced, but they were not on paper. At the moment, they are on paper, and we exchange them. Ukrainian side told us that they are going to analyze it, and it will at the next round we will move further in trying to merge trying to understand each other's positions. This is a complicated conflict. You cannot resolve it at once. We appreciate what Americans are doing, but just do it like that. You need to talk to each other, and you need to understand a position. You need to get acquaintance with what is happening on the ground, what is realistic, what is not. In our view, that the Ukrainian memorandum, it just contained two or three positions. It is once again to give us children. We explained about children. They say we would like to be members of NATO, but it is clear that there is no high desire to accept them to NATO. Why do they do it? Next, they are saying, let's make a summit. Summit for what? Summit is usually done just to sign an agreement or to resolve the remaining high differences, but it should be three or four differences, not the variety. If President Zelensky would like to make a show out of this summit that he has come and face our president and said what he would like to say, then it is no sense for us. We need a summit for serious things, for really not establishing a short ceasefire, but to have a solid and forever a resolution of this conflict, that it will not going to emerge once again in the next year or two, or 10, or 5, or 30.
Russia was relying on the fact that the Europeans, perhaps the United States, would eventually abandon Ukraine, and Ukraine would lose its willpower. None of those things has happened. The Europeans stand by Ukraine. And then we're seeing the losses that Russia is also enduring. Has this been a complete disaster for Russia?
I would say so. We are, well, I do not want to repeat all these things, but you are right that it now in the path to the peace, the most efforts has been done by four capitals. This is London, Brussels, Paris, and Berlin. They are resisting very strongly that we will come to the end of this conflict, because they have invested a lot politically, militarily, financially into Ukraine and in this conflict. And as you remember, just some months ago, they were speaking about strategic defeat of Russia, that they are going to punish Russia, they are going to defeat Russia. And mostly it has been said by Europeans, which I named, that things should be resolved on the battlefield. They are now being resolved on the battlefield, but not for the benefit of Ukraine, I'm afraid, well, and for those who are resisting it.
Well, we saw at the weekend that was to the benefit of Ukraine. What happened?
No, you're coming once again. You'd have no more questions.
No, I have questions, but
you're coming back to the same...
Because it is a major operation. It has left analysts, military experts around the world shocked at the fact that it does give you an insight into modern warfare conflict is being fought.
In Western press, in Western media, it has, of course, got a huge round of applause. We have seen it. Neither experts nor journalists has mentioned anything about military balance, about strategic stability, about necessity to think what they are doing sometime.
Do you wish to clarify that?
I just clarified it in the very beginning.
So that's the point you're making, that this is further escalating things by Ukraine defending itself?
Yes. Actions like that, they are bringing the conflict to a different level of escalation.
Which would mean what?
Which would mean better not to, and better to realize and to remember whatever we're doing. We have a limited conflict right now. Which has a wider projection on the European security, but limited conflict should stay a limited conflict and not to escalate it, not to try to engulf World War III. That's the worst case scenario that we can imagine.
And you're saying if it goes along this trajectory and there are bases are targeted deep inside Russia, it could escalate beyond Ukraine further across Europe?
Of course, we are going to take measures that it is not going to repeat. In the beginning of the conflict, there were attacks against Crimean Bridge. We have really taken precautions on it, technical precautions, and last bomb attack that happened yesterday, it hasn't damaged the bridge. So we will take different precautions to make it safe all across the country. So, of course, we are keen about our nuclear potentials should be preserved totally, because it is too much very, very important thing to do.
Western intelligence agencies don't believe that Russia would use its nuclear capabilities, or it doesn't look like you've deployed in any way to retaliate. Is that correct at this stage?
You ask me what yes. Western, what Western
that's
agencies
their,
think.
That's their assessment. Is that Russia's position?
The position on the military things can be elaborated only by the general staff, and I am not part of it at all. Until now, we are always saying that it's not a type of a conflict where we are going to use... This is in our military doctrine. But there are provisions which have been carefully studied by Western experts, what we are saying about that. It is all in the military doctrine, in which cases we may use our nuclear forces. I simply do not want to repeat it. It's a discussion that has taken place several months ago.
So that option is on the table?
Which one?
The nuclear one.
I don't think so, no.
Ambassador, I've just got a couple more questions. I want to ask you about this push for NATO defense spending to be put up to 5%, which the U.S. Defense Secretary says can be achieved and will be achieved. How does Russia react and respond to that? Do you view that as a threat?
I will say that we did expect that it's going to happen. So that is not up to us to decide. It is up to NATO countries, to the United Kingdom to decide where it's going to spend their own money. Either it is on these military toys or it's on the social welfare, on NHS, on railways as well, which are in a bad condition, so we'll see, certainly. And otherwise, if they would like to spend military their money, governmental money, which is scarce on militarization, so I cannot criticize them because it will be said that I'm trying to intervene in internal affairs. But to my mind, all of this is an excessive effort because what we have in Europe, it is a regional conflict. It should not involve much more. And when we will reach our goals, which everybody knows right now, I think we will have to come to a much wider negotiations on European security, which is unavoidable. We call it right now Eurasian security, which is more important because we rely also on China. But anyway, we should come back to the principles which we have elaborated 30 years ago and involve them. And we make the life come get them back to life, I will say, of initially coexistence and normal cooperation in Europe as it stands for dozens and dozens of years.
Ambassador, the reason I ask about the defense spending that NATO is looking at upping it to 5% is based on the defense review here in this country. They're mm-hmm. also obviously trying to meet those targets because one of the major threats they mm-hmm. see is from Russia.
Yeah, it is fantastic, and I like it. It is. Your Minister of Defense has said that they have daily threat from Russia in the sea, in the air, and on the earth. I very much would like to see these threats. What does he mean? Does he mean that he also said, your Prime Minister, that the level of life of working people has downgraded because of threat from Russia? What does he mean? Is it a safe passage through La Manche or English Channel by our ships is diminishing the level of life here in Britain or something else? This story is as old as the world. When the government is not capable to deal with internal economics and cannot provide for its population the normal conditions of life, then it is trying to find an outside threat and to concentrate on saying, let's point this outside threat. This is damaging our life. So that's...
Well, I want to take you back then to mm-hmm. what you said at the very beginning of the conversation when I asked you about the attack on the air bases, and you said that the finger of blame should be pointed on London. And we know that the British military, how deeply embedded it is with the Ukrainian military. This is what you said. If that is what Moscow believes, should Britain not feel threatened and not prepare itself?
It is not me. It is, if you remember, in March there was long articles in Times, if I'm not mistaken, and other articles, how deep British militaries are involved with Ukrainians in targeting, in flight plans, in provision of other information, satellite information, and so on. So there is nothing new in it. It is just you have to reread these stories on it. And, of course, it makes not only us, but experts, that are not biased, of course, to point finger also, I wouldn't say London, I will say to those who possess these high technologies, satellites, this type of information that is supposed to be provided to the Ukrainians to mount this operation, which was very complicated, I will say, to mount. And they do recognize it. It has taken a year and a half to do all of that, but without outside assistance and outside help, it was not possible. So I'm not saying that we did have a discussion with U.S. people, with the president directly. He said no. And we very much hope that London authorities will say the same thing. And that at least they understand what it is necessity of strategic stability.
And just, you know, finally on that point, when you say that this is just a regional conflict and no one wants to see it escalate into World War III, but because it's impacting the sort of strategic strategic stability that you're talking about, should Western capitals not be preparing themselves, not be upping their defense spending when Russia is saying, if you continue in this way, this will escalate?
No, Yolda, it's not a question to me, even not to Moscow. It is a question to these Western capitals, how they would like to spend their own money. So it is up to them either to raise it to up to what it is right now, 2.7% or to 3% or 5%. The issue of 5% increase is running all around. As he used to work in NATO, and I remember, even 20 years ago, Americans were saying that 5% will be good, or 3% will be good. You should raise it higher and higher. And of course, I do understand it, because at the moment, Washington do not want to pay for defense of the Europeans. They would like to concentrate on other things. They would like to spend their money rationally and inside the country. So if Europeans decide to spend money for military, as I say, toys or equipment, it is up to them to do it. You shouldn't ask us on it. But as we stated many times and in our statement of the embassy, we do not represent any threat to Britain at all, neither on the sea nor in the air nor on the earth. It is all invention, as I have said, to distract attention from domestic things.
Ambassador, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, good. Thank you.